Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I am Meg, and our favorite writer on the storm, Connie, is going to tell us about the Whitaker family murder.
Dude, that was crazy yesterday. The weather yesterday was... Have you seen pictures? Have you seen pictures of Winchester, Indiana?
That was very Hoosier of you. Seen them pictures? Yeah, I have seen pictures, and I saw a couple of friends of mine had houses that were hit, or family with houses that were hit with tornado stuff. So it's scary, scary stuff.
Yeah, it's freaking nuts.
Why do they make the emergency alert sound the scariest sound on the planet? Like, we're already freaked out that it's storming, and then it's like, like, how can we make this worse for you?
I think it's so you take it serious. Because what if
it's very panic inducing?
If you were just like, do, 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 I'd be like, oh, I have time.
If it was
screaming at me like that, I'm like, shit.
You're like, oh no, I should pay attention.
What if it was like the Jeopardy theme song?
Like you're running out of time. That would almost be scarier.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Well, this case that we're going to talk about is not hilarious. So let's get right to it. Kent and Trisha Whitaker were set up on a blind date. He says that they hit it off very well from the start, and within a matter of months, they had fallen madly in love. Kent worked at Trisha's father's construction company in the finance area, and on June 21st, 1975, they were married. The couple enjoyed wedded bliss for 4 years before they welcomed their first son, Bart, and then 4 years later, their second son, Kevin, was born. Kent and Trisha worked hard to make sure their boys wanted for nothing. They had a happy home. In the summers and on breaks, it was bustling with Bart and Kevin's friends. They had sporting activities that they went to and literally everything that the boys could want. When they started driving, both of them had like luxury cars. These boys had the life.
They were living a life of, they were living a lavish lifestyle, huh?
Sure, yeah. Kent and Trisha were the best of friends. They were a couple who actually enjoyed spending time together. Trisha's brother said that Kent would literally brush his teeth before he went home so that he could be more presentable for his bride. Her brother described the two of them as soulmates. And really, this isn't going to be a case where we find out after the fact that the two secretly hated each other and like there were a lot of issues behind closed doors, secret resentment. This is as real of a fairy tale love story as we could have on a true crime podcast. And that's what makes this case so awful to hear.
Oh, I hate that already.
Yeah, me too. As Bart and Kevin grew into teenagers, their differences really showed. Bart was interested in finance. He liked to learn about everything. He was more of what like you would call the preppy type. Kevin would much rather be seen in blue jeans and playing sports. Like I said, they had the nicest cars. They lived in a great house. They went on a lot of vacations. And they had two parents who were absolutely dedicated to making sure that their kids had a great childhood. They lived in Sugarland, Texas, and Bart attended Clements High School back in 1996. This was a really like well-to-do neighborhood, and Bart and his friends thought that in an elite setting, they were top of that elite status. And financially, they weren't wrong. Adam Lipp became close with Bart during his junior year of high school, which was Bart's sophomore year. The two discussed life over weightlifting sessions. They talked about life, they talked about women, and mostly they talked about money. There were a couple finance bros, is what we would call them in 2024.
That's what the internet would call them?
Yes, exactly. Adam said that they didn't have to ever portray this image of wealth and status because they just had it, and it was nothing new for them. As the conversations became deeper than just surface level, Adam said that despite the facade that Bart portrayed of having a close connection with his family, it grew to be one that was more focused on spite. Bart was naturally closer with his dad, and his relationship with his mom felt estranged. He felt like his mom paid more attention to his younger brother, which, you know, it's normal. He thought he was superior to Kevin in all aspects. He's like, this guy's a bum. He doesn't do anything. He's a pushover. He's not a true man. Which I want to remind you at this time, Kevin was only in like seventh or eighth grade. So,
well, I thought you were talking about like adult men. I was like, okay.
No. Like at this point. That
sounds like a 12-year-old. All right. I'm with you.
Yeah. Bart is a sophomore in high school. So he's only like 7th or 8th grade. He thought it was gross how his brother would spend time making friends, playing sports, instead of focusing on his academics. He referred to his brother as a lazy, good-for-nothing bum. And really, he had himself on the highest pedestal. He felt like he was Atlas because he had the whole world on his shoulders. Because life for a very upper-class white man in Texas is awful, as you can
white
imagine.
White boy.
Like, it's not even like, a man.
It's not, that's not a man.
White boy. In July of 1997, Bart and two of his friends decided that the best way to spend their summer vacation was vandalizing the schools in town and burglarizing them. They broke in. They stole things from, first they started with their high school. They stole a bunch of electronics. And then after a few times, the vandalism wasn't cutting it for them. So they headed to the elementary schools, starting with the one that his mom, Trisha, worked at. When it was inevitably discovered that Bart and his cronies were behind all of the vandalism and burglaries, he was immediately arrested and expelled from school. The judge made him see a psychiatrist to see if he would be fit to return to school. And Kent and Trisha were hopeful that the psychiatrist would give a glowing recommendation because to them, it's just, just a normal thing. Kids, you know, he just had a bad, you know, just a little blemish on the record type thing. However, they met with a Dr. O'Rourke, and she met with Bart 10 times. And her letter and like her notes on Bart weren't what Trisha and Kent were expecting at all. She said that she did not recommend Bart return to school and that him having some jail time would benefit him. She said that Bart was an egocentric man who has an inflated sense of self-importance combined with an intense mistrust of others. She went on to say that his demeanor invariably invokes exasperation and animosity in his friends, relatives, and coworkers, and that his only purpose that he felt was to outwit others, exerting power over them before they can exploit him.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah, for like a 17-year-old kid, because this is like the summer before his senior year. The final nail was that she believed he possessed a narcissistic personality trait, specifically only viewing people as tools instead of forming actual relationships. And she did say that while a lot of teenagers do possess some of these traits, essentially Bart's traits were off the chart. However, she said that since Bart came from such a close family with strong values, no prior history of criminal activities, that the results must be skewed for some reason. And instead of diagnosing him per the test results, she diagnosed him with an adjustment disorder instead. And even more surprising, instead of following the recommendations in her own notes, she wrote a letter to the school saying that she recommends Bart return to high school. But the high school was like, yeah, no, he can't come back here.
Yeah, good.
And they upheld his expulsion. So Bart finished his high school at a private Baptist academy for his senior year.
Okay.
Following graduation, Bart Whitaker attended Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Something that surprised a lot of people that he interacted with because he was always boasting that he was Princeton or Stanford material. Not that Baylor is not a prestigious college, but he was always like, I am Ivy League, baby. Duh, look at me.
I don't believe that. Based on what I've heard thus far.
Soon after moving to Baylor, he met a boy named Will Anthony and another boy named Justin Peters. The two guys would become his best friends. The three would hang out, play video games, skip class, make fun of other students because, you know, he only surrounded himself with people who had like an inflated sense of self-worth. Justin and Bart kept up on their grades for the most part, but the constant video games and skipping classes took its toll on his friend Will, and Will ended up dropping out of Baylor. Eventually, Will moved back to Waco which is where Baylor is, to be closer with his friends as they still attended school. So he just hung out like adjacently to them. Bart and Will remained close, and Bart started to open up to Will about how much he despised his parents. He called them hypocrites, once again, mad about how much time and attention was spent on his younger brother, Kevin. He started to test the waters with Will. He started by saying, "Man, I want to kill my parents." And Will was like, "Yeah, bro, me too." Is like a, you know, solidarity. Every teenager hates their parents. But Bart didn't stop there. He was persistent with wanting to kill his parents, even going as far as trying to convince Will to help him murder both of them with the promise of a portion of the $1 million life insurance payout that he was sure that his parents had. And Will was very passionate about playing music, and so he manipulated him with that. Bart was like, "You know how much music you could play? You could do an album. You could just solely focus on your music if you didn't have to worry about money and you didn't have to worry about working." And it wouldn't be long before he approached Justin with the same proposition. And honestly, both Will and Justin had the same thoughts. They were like, "Dude, you have the nicest parents. You love them. There is no way you can murder someone that you're close to." And when he started talking to
Justin, why would you want to?
Exactly. Like, okay, so honestly, if I were getting all of the shit that I wanted, you know, nice cars, and my parents were more focused on my kid sibling and I could do whatever the hell I wanted.
You could just do like, what you wanted. Yeah, okay. It sounds like you've got it pretty good.
That sounds like the perfect life for a teenager. When he started talking to Justin about murdering his parents, he started it with, "Do you ever wonder how it would feel to take someone else's life?" And then as the conversation progressed, he brought up how he would like it to be his parents whose life he took. And he was like, "How would you murder someone without getting caught, Justin?" And Justin responded, "I'd probably run them off the road over a cliff because they're teenagers. And like, obviously, that sounds like the best idea."
That's easy.
So easy. But Bart decided that, you know, there's too many variables. There could be paint on the car. And what if the fall over the cliff doesn't kill them? And then Justin was like, "I'd probably have someone dress in all black and ambush them." And Bart was like, "Yep, it's going to be it." He took this plan and ran with it, eventually talking Justin and Will both into helping him carry out his plan with promises of a portion of this insurance payout. In December of 2000, Bart made the call that it was time to go after months of planning. Bart planned to go to dinner with his parents and then have Will break into the house and stage a burglary and then murder Kent and Trisha while Justin waited in the car to drive it, you know, be the getaway driver. The three loaded up in separate cars. Will and Justin followed Bart down to Sugarland and they just waited for the call from him. He called, they had walkie-talkies and he was like, "Okay, do not answer the phone call from me at all. I don't want any numbers tracing back to each other. Just when you see my name on your phone, it's time to go." So Will went to the unlocked window that was left open by Bart, but it took less than 2 minutes for Will to reach out to Justin saying, "The plan was off. You need to come get me." When Justin arrived, he told him that the alarm had went off and it spooked Will so bad because he's normal.
You should be spooked in that case.
So he opened the window and the alarm went off. And when Justin picked him up, he's like, "Drive me right back to Waco." He immediately packed his bags and drove home to, he was from Little Rock, Arkansas. And he just went right back there. Justin wasn't sure if an alarm even went off because he was sure that Will had just chickened out. And by that, I mean come to his senses that he was about to commit murder to two people that were always incredibly welcoming to him. But when Bart
loved him,
when Bart called Justin, he told him that Bart's like, "Yeah, my dad got a call from the security company, but I knew that was going to happen." He wanted to test Will and Justin to see how far they were willing to go for him. He never turned off the alarm like he was supposed to. He had planned the whole thing.
Ew.
So when they get back to Waco, Justin was like, "Look, we're never going to see Will again. He is already halfway to Arkansas by now." Bart started making the comments like he better not run his mouth or he's just going to be a loose end that I have to tie up, which scared the shit out of Justin. Justin's like, "This ain't good, man."
Not a normal if your friends are saying those things to you, those aren't your friends.
Mm-hmm. Later that winter, Bart had gotten bored again. And so they decided to him and Justin decided to burglarize a Hastings, which is like a bookstore. They saw the night clerk there. They grabbed a bunch of stuff and ran out, not counting on the night clerk to chase after them with a pen and paper to jot down the license plate number and a description of the car.
Smart.
So Kurt Whitaker gets a phone call that's like, hey, you just burglarized a Hastings. And he's like, no, sir, that could not be me. I am a grown man, but I know who has that car, and it is my son, Bart. So,
well, you know, you gave him the name Bart, and that is a bad guy name.
That is a bad guy name. This guy is the baddest of guys.
He's that's awful. Bad guy name. We started it by naming him Bart. No, it was not their fault in any way, shape, or form. Every time you say it, it's just like,
mm-hmm. I thought the same name. Thing, like Bart Simpson.
Bart Simpson is not bad. He's a child.
He's still a bad child.
He's a bad boy.
When the police called Bart, he definitely did not immediately rat out Justin to them. Like, hey, man, that my friend Justin did this. But the deal was he would return all the DVDs that they stole. And that would be it. Like, nothing further came from this.
You gotta give back all those DVDs.
Just further inflating Bart's idea in his head that he can get away with anything.
He can do no wrong, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But even Bart ratting him out didn't stop Justin from keeping a close circle with Bart. And after a failed murder for hire attempt, Bart, Justin, and a few of his friends went on a cruise to the Bahamas as a way for Bart to deal with the depression that he felt. Because again, these are very privileged little shits. Like,
having such a hard time robbing people. I just could use a little break in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
One of the friends who went on the cruise with him was his friend Adam from back in high school. Bart approached Justin again and was like, hey, this guy that I used to weightlift with and talk about the universe also is down to help kill my parents. So let's do this. And Justin was like, okay, cool. Adam would later say that Bart was so eager to kill his mom, not just because of the inheritance, but because if she was gone, he had this idea in his head that this whole construction company, which was extremely profitable, would all go to him. But he also had cousins and other family members. And he was like, you know what? Let's kill them too.
Just his entire family?
Just his entire family. He had it in his head that they could commit arson, knock them all out in one fell swoop.
Be the only survivor and no one would suspect a thing.
No one would suspect a thing.
Delusional.
They had like 6 or 7 meetings about this arson plan before they were like, you know what? Better not. This is not a great idea. So Bart goes back to his original plan. Justin would drive Adam to the Whitakers. And then this time Adam will have the keys to unlock the car, like unlock the house. And then he would ambush and kill Trisha and Kent before fleeing out the backyard, over the fence and out the neighborhood. He had it all planned out. He literally drew up where Adam should be in the house to make all of this happen.
Absurd.
And there is, I've said it before, I'm not a huge, like, really religious person, but there were so many instances of divine intervention where the sign was like, hey, you probably shouldn't do this.
Hey, don't do that.
As the time ticked near to when the three were going to execute this plan, it's like a Saturday night, Justin was visited by one of his high school friends, like a girl that he went to high school with. Her name was Jennifer. She was like, hey, man, come to this sorority party that I have. And Justin kept being like, no, I have plans tonight. I have plans. I can't.
Sorry, I have to commit murder.
Yeah, I can't. Well, that's what he eventually said. He's like, I have to give this kid named Adam a ride to Sugarland so he can murder Bart's parents. And Jennifer was like, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah, in no world, if it's a teenage boy and his choice is between cute girl or murder, if he picks murder, that's a dud. We got to get rid of that one.
Well, once Justin left, Jennifer did the only thing she could do. She called the police.
Good.
In another act of divine intervention for Justin, the car that Bart stole for him was running out of gas on the way to Sugarland. And Bart was set on, you cannot get gas in Sugarland. You can't ever be seen here. So he's like in the middle of fucking nowhere, Texas. Like, what am I supposed to do? So he calls Bart. Well, after he calls Bart and asks him like, hey, I need you to bring me gas, his phone rings. The conversation went like this. Justin, hello. This is Kent Whitaker, Bart's dad. How are you doing, son? Justin was like, I'm okay. Like, I'm okay, Mr. Whitaker. And he's like, I hate to bother you, but I think we are the victim of some type of prank call. Somebody from Waco called 911 and they called the police and the police called us down here. And Justin was like, yes. And he went on to say, they said something ridiculous about you and Bart. And I'm sure it's kind of like some kind of silly joke that one of your college buddies is probably playing on you. Apparently, they said that you and Bart were on your way to Sugarland to kill me and Bart's mom. And he laughed.
Couldn't be you, right?
Yeah, he was like, and then he laughed and he was like, and Justin was like, oh my God, yeah, you're right. That is so ridiculous. And then Kent was just like, that's exactly what I said. I know you two boys like to have fun, but I also know you had nothing to do with this. Sorry to bother you. Maybe you can find out who put you two boys up to this. Take care of yourselves and have a good night.
Ugh, what a sweet dad.
Mm-hmm. 10 minutes later, Bart's dumbass pulls up behind him in this brand new like Yukon black Yukon SUV, because that's what he drove, because, you know, he was such a deprived child. And he's like, hey, man, I got your gas. And Justin was like, bro, no, there's no fucking way this is happening. I just got a call from your dad. He knows what we are about to do. The police and Mr. Whitaker, Kent, thought that the whole thing was just a prank that had gotten out of control. Bart had a girlfriend and she was like, oh my gosh, this is so ridiculous. Bart would never. Everyone just blew the whole thing off. Bart, knowing that he literally had a plan to kill his family, did not blow it off. He was so freaked out by the police that he took off in his car and ran away to Dallas. And he was gone for 3 days before anyone could find him. When they finally found him, he told his parents that he was scared, confused, and worried that he was going to be blamed for something he had no involvement in.
Dad, I'm just so scared.
I'm just a little boy. I'm just a scared little boy. And his parents were like, no, son, we know that that could never be true.
We love you so much.
You would never do anything to harm us. Or anyone else for that matter. Bart came back to Waco, did not mention this to Justin, but immediately moved out. Like, Bart moved out. And the two of them never spoke again.
Smart.
Good for Justin. Like, Justin really dodged one there.
Justin was like, I cannot be a part. I cannot be a part of this man's life.
And then Bart was like, I think that Waco is no longer full of people who will kill my parents for me. So he planned, like, and his parents were like, yeah, you know what? Maybe a fresh start is what you need. Okay, let's get you out of here. So he transferred to Sam Houston State University. It's like 90 miles north of Sugarland. He claimed that he wanted a job with the FBI and he would make a good homicide detective or even a criminal profiler because he could, quote, think like a criminal. And it's like, bro, no one knew how right you were that you could think like a criminal. Of course, though. He did not tell his parents that he had not completed enough courses at Baylor to even be considered to have finished his freshman year, even though he had already spent 2 years in school and completely unaware of Bart being like a lying shithead. Mm-hmm. His parents funded their son's entire move, bought a $90,000 townhouse.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They were like, you know what? We're going to help you with this.
We're going to help you out. You need it. You need some help.
Bart landed a job as a manager of the dining room restaurant at this like yacht country club, because like, why not? And he made friends with a young man named Chris Brashear. Bart was even like, hey, look, man, I'm going to hook you up with a job at the restaurant. And as you know, from everything we have said the previous two times, it did not take Bart long to find more lackeys and start the whole spiel of roping people into killing his parents for him.
Hey, man, I've really been thinking about murdering my parents. I just need the right dudes to do it with.
This is the first time, hear me out, first time I've ever thought about this plan. You guys could be the ones to help me.
Definitely haven't had anyone bail on me before.
Nope. God is not sitting there being like, no, I'm not. No, no. It's like every sign was like, repent. Like, stop what you're doing. This is a bad idea.
And like, he
was
just we're like, stopping you from doing this. And yet you continue to try to do it.
He also became friends with a man named Steve Champagne. And I say, well, man, they're like in their early 20s. Like, they're still adult. They're like teenage men.
If I had a cool name like that, I would be unstoppable.
Dude, same.
I would be a rapper immediately.
Oh, for sure. Or like a
Steve Champagne. Like, you can go one of two ways. Rapper, bottle girl.
That's it. That's
either way, cool. You're in the club.
Well, this time when he brought it up to Steve and Chris, they are both like, oh, for sure. Let's do this.
They're like, hell yeah. Let's murder a guy.
And because his plan to break in and do this botched robbery, the past two times he's tried it, worked out so well. He's like, you know what? I'm gonna do it again. I have this new plan just came to me. Hear me out. Let's do this. And I'm sorry. I'm not saying that in a joking way, like this is a joking matter, but this guy was such a fucking bonehead.
This is no laughing matter.
This is
just funny how stupid he was.
Yes, it's no laughing matter. I understand because it is horrific. But this guy was just such a dipshit. Like, that's the only way to describe it. It's a dipshit.
Dipshit.
So on December 10th, 2003, nearly 3 years after Bart Whitaker first tried and failed to murder his parents, he visited Sugarland under the false pretense that he was going to be graduating soon from Sam Houston State University. And unfortunately, Kent and Trisha had no idea that Bart was barely attending school. And even after 3 years in college, he was only enrolled as a freshman with a 1.4 GPA.
Jeez. But you're not graduating, bud.
Bart arrives at their house and they're going to this really nice restaurant that they love. And when he pulls up to the house and he's in there like talking to him, they gift him with a $4,000 Rolex as a pre-graduation gift because they were so fucking proud of their son.
Like, happy graduation. Have a Rolex.
Yeah. And his brother Kevin was in town because his brother was finishing his first semester at Texas A&M. And they're like, let's all go to dinner. We're going to celebrate. What they didn't realize is that Steve Champagne was parked two blocks away from the Whitakers. And when they pulled away, Chris Brashear was waiting inside the home, having broken into the gun cabinet that Bart told him where it was, staging what he believed would look like a burglary. Later that night, Brandon Stanley, the Whitakers' neighbor, was home for the holidays, and he was sitting at his computer when he heard shots come from the Whitaker home. He ran to his parents, Cliff and Darlene, and told them, hey, something's going on outside. I hear screaming and shooting. So Cliff and Brandon ran out the door, but nothing prepared them for the scene that they were about to find from their longtime neighbors. Around 8 o'clock that night, the Whitakers had arrived home. The four of them piled out of their car from dinner, and as they were walking up to the house, Bart was like, oh, I gotta go get my phone, because this longtime girlfriend that he's had, he's like, I gotta let Lynn know we're home so she can come over since she couldn't come to dinner. Kevin skirted around his mom to, like, open the door for her first. Standing directly in front of Kevin was a man dressed in all black holding a gun. The first thing that Kent heard was the pop of the gun. His wife took off running because she was going to protect her son. The next thing that Kent heard was her scream as she was also shot. Kent went after his wife, but as he was running, he stepped over a garden hose that was on the front porch. He saw his wife and youngest son both lying inside. Both were bleeding badly. And he could not tell if Kevin was moving or not. He could still hear, as awful as it sounds, he could still hear Trisha yelling, like barely saying, like, help me. But he could not see Kevin making any movement. By this time, Bart began to run up the driveway because he had also surprisingly heard the gunshots of this murder plan that he, after all this time, he's putting into motion. He yelled for his dad, and then another gunshot went off. Bart ran through the front yard and stepped over his dad, who was laying in a pool of his own blood, looked down, saw his mom, went past her, and went after the person who had shot his family. Bart ran after Chris, the man he had convinced to kill his family, but before he could subdue him, the fourth and final gunshot rang out, and Bart also went down. Brandon and Cliff encountered Kent first, and Cliff screamed for his son to go call 911 and bring something to try and stop the blood that was pouring from Kent's chest. He looked up and saw Trisha kneeling over with her head on the porch, also surrounded by a pool of blood. He realized that Kevin was taking what would be his final breaths. Police had been called. Cliff's wife was like, hey, you need to leave. Like, you need to get out of there. Like, there could be, the guy could still be in there. We don't know who did this. So Cliff ran back into his house and grabbed his shotgun. And his wife was like, are you fucking crazy? If police pull up and see you with a gun and see this whole family, like,
they're going to think it's you.
They're going to think it's you. And so he was like, okay. So he went back over there. He was trying to, like, apply pressure to help Kent. Officers finally arrived and he's like, hey, I came over here. These are my neighbors. Officer Philip Previs arrived at the scene and he's like, hey, you need to go. Go to your driveway. We got it from here. Thank you for helping, but, you know, step back a little bit. As he made his way through this grisly scene, what he noticed first and what was very odd to him was that all of the drawers in two of the rooms, like the front rooms, were pulled out, but not pulled out in the way that you would think someone frantically looking for something. They were all pulled out to the same length. Nothing was ransacked and none of the expensive electronics that were, you know, all throughout the home, none of those were taken. He made his way into the kitchen where he found Bart, who was shot in the shoulder. He told them, I tried to take out the person, you know, who's, I tried to stop him, but I couldn't. And he's like, did you hit him? And he was like, because the gun was still in the kitchen. And he's like, I think I did. Mm-hmm. Paramedics arrived and Kent was rushed to surgery, where he would survive the gunshot wound to the chest. And he stayed in the hospital for a lengthy amount of time after that. Trisha was lifelined, but unfortunately, she did succumb to her injuries in the helicopter on the way to the hospital. Kevin was pronounced dead at the scene. Bart was also taken to the hospital, but surprise, surprise, he had non-life-threatening injuries. 3 days after the ambush, Bart was released from the hospital and he went to revisit the crime scene with police. He maintained that it was dark the whole time. He didn't see the shooter before chasing him out the back door, just described the black clothing. But investigators were skeptical about Bart's statements. Bart was really vague on some details, like timelines and stuff that he should have been fresh on because, you know, like it was really quick. And he was shot in the shoulder, but he wasn't at any point the risk of like bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
And police realized like someone had targeted this family. This was not a burglary. There's nothing stolen. Police start looking into Bart and they're like, wait a second. He is barely a student at Sam Houston State. He wasn't graduating, which is what this entire evening was about. This man brought his family together for a specific reason, because otherwise all four of them wouldn't have been together. That's why his brother had even come home. So it didn't take long for Bart to become suspect number one.
Ding dong.
Mm-hmm. A week after the double homicide, Adam Hipp, we talked about him before, entered the police station. He said, hey, this was Bart. And the police were like, okay, how do you know that? And he said, because he tried convincing me to do the exact same thing back in 2001. He told the police officers everything. He drew that same map that Bart had drawn, like told him where to go. And it was exactly what had happened a week prior. Unfortunately, Adam Hipp's comments and like his statement, it wasn't enough to press charges against Bart yet. But he agreed to he's like, okay, let me try to talk to him on the phone. Let me try to trap him. And Bart talked to Adam, but he never mentioned about the shooting. But he had mentioned just like casually another roommate of that they had, Chris Brashear, as we know, the man who murdered the family.
Mm-hmm.
Police questioned him and he was like, nope, I was at Hooters the night of the murder. And he was like, okay, can anyone like verify this?
Can you corroborate that this man was at Hooters?
And he's like, yeah, my friend Steve Champagne and Steve Champagne's girlfriend, we were all at Hooters. So they brought Steve in, but Steve did not hold as steady as Chris and Bart. Little by little, Steve started saying, at first he's like, no, I don't know anything about this. And then he was like, okay. I drove the car. I parked a couple blocks away. Chris went in.
Steve, you got nothing. You're made of jelly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he said, furthermore, you can find a bag in Lake Conroe with all of the physical evidence you need. There's two-way radios, water bottles, the ammunition. And so when divers recovered the bag, Chris's DNA was actually on the water bottle.
Oh my God.
The tool used to pry the gun safe and a cell phone used during the commission of the crime. Steve and Chris both were like, hey, Bart made us do this. Both of them were charged with 2 counts of capital murder. But when police went to find Bart to arrest him, because this is now like months, you know, like months down the road, because it, you know, takes some time for all of this. During this time, he had moved back into that house with his dad to help him recover.
Ew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll let that marinate for a second, because that had me ill. When the police went to...
Oh, Dad, I'll help you.
When the police, they're like, all right, let's go. We have enough to get this bastard. Bart was nowhere to be found. He had fled the country to Mexico. He paid a man named Rudy Rios $3,000 to assume his identity. And he was like, I am a member of the military. I am going AWOL. I was shot overseas and I don't want to go back.
Wow, elaborate.
Very elaborate. And that was the story. And he like met a woman down there. He was living with her. He told her the same story. And he was on the run in Mexico for 18 months before Rudy called the police after seeing a Crime Stoppers report about him.
I thought you were going to say 18 years and I was going to lose my mind.
No. Mexican officials aided U.S. officials in tracking down Bart's whereabouts. And on September 24th, 2005, which is my daughter's birthday, not 2005, but September 24th, he was extradited to the States to face prosecution. He was charged with capital murder, and his trial didn't begin for another almost 18 months. And on March 3rd, 2007, it began. What is crazy to me, and something that I understand, so Kent says that he made the decision before he even knew who shot and killed his family. And shot him. He made the decision as he was lying in the hospital that he was going to forgive whoever did this to them. He argued the whole time publicly for his son to not face the death penalty.
Of course, because he's darling.
Based largely on Steve Champagne's testimony, prosecutors accused Bart of being the mastermind, which he was, staging his own shooting, which he did, and the shootings of his family members, with greed being the underlying reason. They're like, okay, your motive is greed, man. You've told everybody about how much money you stand to make if your family is out of the picture. After 6 days of trial, only 1.5 hours of jury deliberations, he was found guilty of murder. During the sentencing, the jury, while the jury was like deciding, the court was shown like pictures of what was like that night from dinner. Bart was smiling with his family. He was like taking pictures. There's pictures of him with his brother, like with his arm around him. And knowing that he had already planned his family's murder at this time. 10 hours of deliberations later, the jury sentenced Bart to death. Chris Brashear and Steve Champagne, because they cooperated with prosecutors, Chris was handed a life sentence and Steve Champagne was sentenced to 15 years behind bars. The neighbor, Brandon, who had found him and his dad helped the Whitakers the night they were shot, said, it brought me to the conclusion that evil is very real, very tangible, and it has a long plan behind it. I truly think Bart was evil. And he was on death row for years. And this whole time, his dad is like petitioning to like have it, you know, like change to life without possibility of parole. Like, please don't murder my family. Like, I know he murdered my family. Please do not punish me even more by having my
just like that's his only family member left. Yeah, and like, he doesn't want him.
Exactly.
I hate it. I understand it, but I hate it.
He was scheduled to die on February 22nd, 2018 at 6 p.m. And at 5:30, Governor Greg Abbott commuted his sentence from death to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. He was
he was on the cusp.
Yeah. And the vote was unanimous from the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles, which the jurors who were on who voted for him to have the death penalty, a lot of them have spoken out because they thought it was bullshit that he did not get the death penalty.
Well, he just was so, like, it wasn't the first time he had tried it. And then he, like, yeah, I would be annoyed as well. Again, you know, I'm pretty anti-death penalty, but I can see why he would, again, you get an out once, right? Like, you're about to do something and something stops you from doing it. You're like, all right, that was my sign. Don't do that terrible thing.
Yeah, he
had, and yet you continue to do it.
Yeah. And even after Bart said his hate towards his parents because they brought him into this world when he didn't ask to be. It's like, join the fucking club, man. Join the club.
No one asks to be born. We get to be.
And like, even after all of this, planning on several occasions to kill his family, to adding his brother into the plan so he would be the sole person to have this inheritance, his dad still saved his life. And if that isn't a testament to what type of man Kent Whitaker is, I don't know what is. I was like, gasp, because I was like, holy shit. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if
it was my kid. No way. I would be like, I don't even want that one anymore.
Yeah, like, bad apple. Get the fuck out of here.
That, yeah, that's a bad apple. And there's, again, he's a better man than I am for wanting his son to live.
And I know this sounds bad, but hear me out before anyone comes for me. I am not saying it makes it any better if one of my child commits a crime against a stranger. That is still, I don't know if I could forgive them for that, to be honest. But to plan your entire family that loves you, that cares about you, that you were brought up with zero fucking trauma. And I don't know.
That you were given. Well, that's part of the problem, right? Is that he was given everything. He never had to work for anything, or he never saw like any consequence of any action until it was like the worst action.
I don't know. I'm not like an advocate for kids like getting hit, but that kid needed beat. Like one good like ass kicking where he was like, okay, wait a second. Maybe I am not Atlas. I do not have the world on my shoulders.
Probably would have made it worse. It'd probably be like, I was beaten as a child.
This is why I did this.
This is why I am the way that I am.
Like the psychiatrist who have like sat with him, they're like, he just sees people as tools. He does not have any real relationships with anyone. Everything is fake. He's such a dipshit. That was my addition.
But like, that's what I hate him. Actually, don't send him here anymore. He sucks.
But I watched an interview that his dad did, and his dad is like, I hope at some point when I come, because he was like on Good Morning America, he was like, I hope at some point I can come back here and tell you all of the positive things that Bart is doing in general population. I hope that he is, you know, like, I really feel like he's gonna do the best with the second chance of life that he's given.
Ugh, whatever.
I low-key kind of hope that, I kind of wish that like the person who was making the calls, cell phone service got like jammed, or like maybe they had to physically deliver the pardon and like there was,
they missed it by
traffic
by 30 minutes.
And it sucks because like I think what didn't, like with the first two attempts, both sets of men in those situations knew the Whitakers. They had met them. They had spent time with them.
And they still chose to do it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, ultimately, none of them went through with it. The first two times. I'm talking about old Steve and Chris, little shitheads.
Yeah.
But his dad was like, the person who pulled the trigger did not even have the death penalty on the table. It's like, yeah, because he cooperated. If he wouldn't have cooperated, no one would have known that your son was behind murdering your family.
Yes. Bigger picture here. We're looking at the bigger picture.
It gives me very much Good Son vibes, the Macaulay Culkin movie.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Oh my God, it's a wild one. This bad eggs,
man. When did it come out?
Oh, like 1989, 1990, good something. It was really...
Son.
Mm-hmm. It has Elijah Wood in it.
I see that. I'm Googling it. An American,
it's a good one. It's one of my faves. That's probably why I have as much of a fascination with crime as I do.
It says, that was evil has many faces. The story follows a 12-year-old young boy named Mark, who after the death of his mother is said to stay while his aunt, with his aunt, uncle, while his father is away on a business trip. He meets his cousin Henry, who shows signs of violent and evil behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting. Have to check that one out.
It's a good, solid one. And they're like babies in it.
It was like Macaulay Culkin's edgier childhood movie.
He was like, yeah, from Home Alone to this. I think it might have been in between the Home Alones or like right after.
He looks pretty young. He looks about that age in it. Like maybe a little bit older, but.
He's like, this is what happens when you leave your kid at home unattended for long periods of time.
Is this what you want? No.
Man. Dude, if my parents were like, hey, you can tell me whatever you want. I'm going to believe it. I trust you. You are my sweet angel baby. I may be like, oh, my parents. Just to like be relatable. But like low key on the inside, I'd be like, dude, couldn't be my parents.
Nice.
If you're telling me I can do all these things, my parents are going to be doting over my younger sibling and I can just fucking exist doing hood rat things with my friends. Bro, that's what I'm going to do.
I'm in. Yeah, I just... And you know the reason we think that way, though, is because it was never that way for us. Like, no. I'm sure we would be much shittier human beings if we never had to face a single consequence of all of the shitty things that we did.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, but I part faced of them consequences,
that's,
man.
That's
I
wisdom, baby.
I face them consequences.
I still face them every day. Yes. Oh, man.
Yes. But yeah, that was a wild one.
Yeah, that sucked. So sad.
I low-key also like wished that when Chris went to shoot Bart, he missed and like actually killed him. He's
yeah,
like, oh,
that
would have
been like the ideal ending for that is like he died in his own like hijinks.
Yeah, that would have been way better.
That's how I would end that movie if it was a movie. I would be like, oh,
oh for sure.
End roll scene. Credits. End scene. Roll credits. We're done. We're done here.
There was like a big outrage because he wrote some shitty book while he was in prison and Amazon was selling it, and it had nothing to do with crime. It was pretty much like elitism, you know, as one does when you
Amazon
think
doesn't care as long as they make their buck. Like,
yeah,
they're like, pull it, Amazon, be ethical. I mean, Amazon hasn't been ethical about a damn thing. Why would they start now?
The B in Bezos stands for bitch, please. I would never. He's like, sorry, can't hear you. Your complaints over my yacht.
I was going to say, my yacht's too far out to sea. What? I get the wind. I'm so sorry. Nerds.
I just hate when it's like a story or not a story, like a case where it's these kids had everything. They had everything. It's like, what were you mad about?
What could you have possibly been that angry about?
No. Well, I talked to one of my friends who's from Texas, and I was like trying to get a feel of these areas, and she's like, "Oh, Sugarland's like a really nice area," and I was like,
"I'm gonna Google that too immediately." Sugar, it's Sugarland. What's not to like?
sugar, dude.
That's where I want to live. Oh, it's just the band. I didn't realize that there was a band called that. Sugarland, Texas. There we go.
Oh yeah, there is a band named Sugarland.
I didn't know. Yeah, it looks very like upper class suburbia.
Sugarland has a song that's written from the mistress's point of view. Oh, and I remember it coming on the radio one day and I was like, this is the worst fucking song I've ever heard. Good vocals, bad message.
It's like if Jolene wrote the song.
It's exactly if Jolene wrote the song. Man. That's wild. But yeah, that's the story of Bart the Bitch Whitaker.
Bart the Bitch. Well, that sucks. I hope he's having a nice time in prison, I guess.
I saw a picture of him and he's like completely bald and just looks like he should get hit in the face.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm like, ew. It
should be worse, honestly.
Yeah, it should be worse.
Perpetual backne.
Oh, dude, that would be a rough one.
It always itches.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Exactly what I was about to say.
Dude, I only thought that because I have this little patch of back knee right now and it itches so bad and it's in the exact spot I can't reach. And so far I'm fast.
Do you find stuff to scratch it with?
I have. Yeah, I had a marker I found in my car that I got it with and I have asked. I walked up to my friend at work and I was like, hey, can you scratch the spot on my back? I just can't reach it. And she was like, oh, okay. And she got it for me. I've asked everyone in my vicinity.
Do you know if you put glycolic acid in like a little spray bottle, mm-hmm. like a facial spray bottle, and you spray it on your back, it will take right care of that baby.
Glycolic.
The Ordinary has a really good one.
I do like The Ordinary. You really turned me onto that.
I love them so much.
I just dermaplaned and used the retinol the other night. Well, not at the same time, but, you know, like I do dermaplane and the next night. Dude, I hadn't done it in a while. It was so gross. There was like quite a bit.
My mental health, the direct reflection of my mental health is how much of my facial hair I'm waxing at the time.
How much I'm getting off of my face. It's, you know, it's kind of true. It's based like, and it's crazy how much better I feel after it. Like I'll look in the mirror and I'll be like, ugh, I can really see my age lately. And so then I'll like I'll do like a peel and then I'll dermaplane and then I'll do my skincare for like 4 days straight. And I'm like, I'm a new woman. I could do anything in the world I wanted to do.
My son was like, you, mom, I'm not trying to be mean, but I can see a little bit of a mustache. And I said, are you jealous? Are you jealous, man, that I could grow a better mustache than you can?
There was one time when a boy on the bus told me, he was like, hey, you have more of a mustache than I do. And I was like, well, at least I can grow one.
Dude, I had the same thing, except for we were playing mat ball in gym class. And I would name drop this guy here because I still think about him often. And last time I saw a picture of him, he went bald. And all I have to say is karma.
He still can't grow a mustache.
He still can't grow a mustache. You can't even grow hair on your head.
My daughter was talking about if people, this is just like all hypothetical. She was like, if someone bullies me in this manner, this is the comeback that I have prepared for when that happens. And she was like telling them to me. And I was like, these are all great. I'm confident in your ability to like lay. And she's like, I'm just going to roast him. I'm just going to roast him right back. I was like, that's all you can do. And like, and that's how you make friends also. Like if you do that back and they are like, ah, ha, 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 then you're homies. And dude, it's good. If they get mad about it, we don't want to be friends with those people.
I pray that my daughter will learn. But she is such a sweet soul through and through. She just doesn't have it in her. Like, even when I'm like, you can tell your brother to leave you alone. And she was like, can I just tell him that mom wants him? I'll tell them mom needs you. And I'll, like, they could walk by and fart. And I'll be like, that's actually how I knew my middle son's fart smelled awful the other night, because my daughter complained about it. Because usually she's just like, no, I'm not going to tell him he stinks. I'm like, but they
do. It's not nice. You know, she was a lot like that for a very long time. Like, we've talked before how the little one is much more like feral than the older one, mm-hmm. and is much more willing to like fight. But it got to a point where I was like, you are a lot bigger than her. If she's doing that, like move or just push her down, like give her one good one and she'll stop. Like, and I guess I shouldn't encourage my children to like physically fight each other, but also like handle it. Like, you're just letting her do it. And I understand she's littler than you and you're probably just being polite. There's a lot of variables, but I was also like, I bet if you handle it one or two times, it doesn't happen as frequently.
It's all it takes in my experience. It's all it takes.
Yeah. I mean, well,
and also I'm going to roast you until you cry, because I'm not trying to make friends. Like, if you want
to, I'm no longer willing to make friends. I've lost friends. In fact,
I have. Sometimes it comes back to bite me, but I will promise you, I will hype you
about that.
Yeah. I do not like, if you're going to point out something that makes me insecure, honey, no, that ship has sailed. We're done. Now I'm going to be mean. And I promise I can be, that's what I like saying stuff. Like, I don't let that side of me come out too much, because it's like, I'm going to do it, but you're going to cry.
I just like, if someone makes fun of themselves in front of me, I'll just keep going. Like, I'll just like,
yeah, like, yo,
I'm just like, I'm like, oh, you're making fun of you? I'll make fun of you too. I'll jump on that bus. And then I hurt their feelings on accident. And then they never talk to me again.
It's happened several times, I feel.
That's only happened a few times. That's fine. Because typically, I am traditionally a pretty nice person, but I do joke too hard, which is why we get along, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like mine is my friends, biggest type person. I'm going to hype you up. You could tell me that you went poop for the first time after a week. And I'm like, fuck yeah, you did. That's
you are very good at like hyping from personal experience. You're very good at like hyping me up. And not only that, but just like checking in about stuff. Like I'm not good at that as a friend. Like when people have stuff going on in their lives and they tell me, I'm like, oh no, I'm so sorry. Please let me know if you need anything. And then I'm like, yeah, I don't hear from you. Yeah. And I'm just like, I assume you're okay.
You're good. You could be dead fine, bitch, but I'm just assuming you're fine.
You're good. But you check in. You're like, hey, this is happening. And I thought about it the other day when you texted me. I was like, I should have checked in. Should have checked in with her. And I didn't.
Oh, don't worry. It's just my anxiety having me rocking in a corner, like all the horrible things that could be happening to you right now.
It's fine. We're fine.
Everything's great. Hey, guess what?
Hmm.
We're going to end this episode and then record another one immediately. So
yeah, we are going to do that. So let's go.
See ya.
Thank you so much for listening to Gruesome, Horrific, True Crime.
We love you, beautiful strangers. And if you love us too, here are some ways that you can support Gruesome. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. This helps other true crime connoisseurs find us. Follow us at Gruesome Podcasts on Instagram or TikTok and talk to us on our posts.
Join the Patreon. Sign up to join our True Crime Sticker of the Month Club and gain access to bonus episodes and exclusive Patreon perks. Or if a one-time donation is more your thing, we have a Venmo at Gruesome Podcast and a PayPal via our email, gruesomepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from you. It seriously makes our whole life. So send us your questions, comments, suggestions, or just ask our opinion on whether that person you met on Tinder is a serial killer or not.
Tune in next week, and don't forget, lock your windows, lock your doors, and on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.